Welcome to the Spirituality What? Podcast, where we explore the mysteries, joys, and challenges of being spiritual beings navigating our unpredictable human experience we call life here on planet Earth. I'm your friendly guide, Rebecca, ready to jump into our adventure of the day. Hello, my spiritual humans. It's Wednesday. Welcome back to the Spirituality What? Podcast. I'm Rebecca. We are here today for part two with James of Spiritual Journeys, Insights from the Ojibwe Tradition. Today we are going to talk a little bit more about specific Ojibwe spiritual traditions and the four medicines. We're also going to touch on the awe-inspiring spiritual renaissance across the nations, the Great Law, love, humility, and a couple of really other fun things. So thank you so much for joining us today. Wanted to also say today, we've got some new things up on the merch for our Spiritual Gangsta and Spiritual as Fuck merch. So check out the website, spiritualitywhat.com, go to the About page, and that is where the merch link is. All of the merch there is live. It's cool, designed by yours truly. Tell all your friends, and we're gonna get into a conversation with James now.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty intense. So what are some of those spiritual traditions from the Ojibwe culture that kind of went underground that are coming out more to the light? Can you give any examples?
Well, some of the beautiful ones, for example, are the naming ceremonies.
Okay.
You have indigenous children who are getting a naming ceremony around the time that they would in pre-reservation times.
Okay.
So as babies, rather than nowadays, many people who didn't have an opportunity to go through a naming ceremony.
In the past 50 years.
Exactly.
Effectively, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these laws are passed in the late 1880s, 1890s. So wow. It's been even longer than that.
Yeah, yeah.
So the naming ceremonies are taking place. Those are very beautiful. There are other just fantastic ceremonies that are being used for healing, like the sweat lodge, for example, the Mododo's one.
Okay.
You have healing clinics. You have people who are going through healing themselves, and who knows how that healing or what they're healing from, but they'll have an opportunity to go to sweat lodges. These are no longer underground. There is, of course, pipe ceremonies. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'll be doing a pipe ceremony tonight to celebrate the graduates of Anoka Hennepin School District before any great enterprise, cultural or spiritual, you know, to use the four medicines, the sweetgrass, the sage, the cedar, and, of course, the sema, traditional tobacco, are always there. So to go and celebrate that, and we see that very often, and as well as other bigger spiritual ways, such as the Sundance.
I have heard of that. And, yep. I have heard
the
of
Medicine Lodge.
Okay.
And both of those, you are able to now go there without, again, fear of getting arrested or fear of being persecuted in your community. So we are actually seeing a great spiritual renaissance right now with a culture.
Wonderful.
And not just an Ojibwe one, but you can see it in a number of other nations as well.
That's awesome.
I couldn't agree more. It's really inspiring.
It is.
Because they survived. That was a distinct, deliberate attempt to destroy Native culture, history, and spirituality, and to have endured despite generations of pressure.
Right.
To abandon these ways, to see that is utterly inspiring to me. So I see that as an example I'd like to follow and pass on to the generations who are coming.
Yeah, that's really cool. That is really inspiring. So I wanted to go back a little bit to talk about the Great Law again. So just really quickly, that includes the truth, humility, respect, love, bravery, courage, honesty, and enlightenment. And I thought it was really interesting when you talked about that in the book, because those to me are like just foundational, there's nothing different, from my perspective, you know, from believing that those are sort of the building blocks, if you will, to just being a good human, but maybe also a spiritual, a spiritual human as well, both in the Ojibwe culture, as I'm learning in that book, but also just normally, like that's kind of my belief is all of these things. I was wondering, do you have one of those that specifically resonates more or less, or like now in kind of where you are in your life as something that you're like attempting to grow in or to learn from? And if you kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating because it was holistic and you made some good insights that this is just about living a good life, really. And for me, all of a sudden there was that dichotomy of I was raised Roman Catholic.
Oh, so interesting.
Both of my parents went through that. I wasn't confirmed. There were like the series of events that kept me from being confirmed. So it just didn't happen. And when it didn't, I just let it go. But I had gone through, confirmation classes, Sunday school. Again, both my parents went to Catholic school.
Wow.
My mother a boarding school, my dad a Catholic school. And there was no longer this dichotomy for me. This is just me. I don't want to certainly paint all Catholics in this, but there was a dichotomy of going to church and being religious there and then living your life. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this perspective, living these grandfather teachings in my everyday life had become the goal. That was it. That was the spiritual pursuit, was to lead a good life. And why? I mean, you can have two perspectives of it. Why? It could be the self-centered one, because it's good for me, makes me happy. It's far better than what I was doing before. Or the altruistic one. It's good for all of my relatives. Mm-hmm. Both places can take you to the same, both paths can take you to the same place.
Yeah.
I think. So there had been that, and I had realized, okay, I'm going to try this holistic approach where it will be, again, not a dichotomy of religious and then living my kind of secular life. You know, I have this sectioned off time for prayer or for ceremony, and then I do the other, whatever else. Rather than, all right, will this become, you know, for me, a holistic journey where this is something that I can use in my everyday life? And I found that holistic approach that I really couldn't have one of the grandfather teachings, one of the sacred laws without the other. If there were a big one that encapsulates all of them, I think that Zagi Itduin, that grandfather teaching of love, if you look at that insightfully, it has all of those grandfather teachings in it. You know, you truly love someone. Is it effortless to respect them? Is it easy to be humble? And I'm talking about this true unconditional love that I discuss in the book, something that has emerged from deep within me. Is it easy to be humble that I don't need to be more important than you to love you? Do you want to speak the truth to them? Do you want to speak from your heart, or do you want to lie to them? Do you want your life to be holistic? That, okay, I've said I've loved you. Now you'll see it in my actions with honesty, with truth or virtue or righteousness or honesty. It certainly gives you a strong heart to make those difficult decisions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from that point of wisdom or enlightenment, I think if you truly love someone in that way, you truly do, then all of your actions will be right. All of your decisions.
Motivated by the right thing.
Absolutely.
Yep.
No matter what it is, if it's there. So if there is one I'm working on, it would be that, because I think it has all of them. The humility teaching taught me a lot in the beginning. Oh, it was such a weight to be lifted off, because I had, again, you're in personal, you're professional, personal pursuits. And when those have all gone to heck,
what else do you have left? There. Yeah, exactly.
In that moment, I looked at that word that I am not more important than all of my relatives. It's like, I think lowly of myself, but I don't think I'm more important than all of my relatives. Mm-hmm. That moment I stopped competing, I stopped trying to be better, that I stopped trying to be this image I had created of who I thought James Vuklich Kagegabel was, that was a brilliant insight for me. Mm. The world felt lifted from my shoulders.
Yeah.
I felt relief in being humble. And
I mean, I love those. I love the love one. It's very easy to love that one, as you said. It's kind of, it's all encompassing kind of in itself. You also talked about this a little bit earlier, but you talk about it with the love one as well, which is, it's not just human beings as we like these physical forms. It's all of it. It's the trees. It's the circle of light. I mean, it's everything. It's the rocks. It's the water. It's the connection to all of the energy, all of everything.
And in the relationship, that idea of relationship in indigenous cultures, and I use Ojibwe in this particular, it is the relationship that makes them relatives. And so when I use that word in Dinawe Makanadok, all of my relatives, you know, I think the way I was raised, it's very easy to think of someone I have a genetic or married, maybe someone who has married into my family, and I refer to them as relatives rather than a far more vast scope.
My energetic relatives, which is everything in the universe.
Who I have relationship with.
Yeah, exactly. And
all of a sudden, I'm like, well, I need the trees to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely need the water
to
survive. I, you know, if you look at our history, I can't live without the four-legged.
Mm-hmm.
I can't live without the fish.
Yep.
The plants that are growing, the mushkiki, I love that word in Ojibwe. It has in it mushk, strength, and aki, the earth. Our word for medicine in Ojibwe, it's literally the strength of the earth.
Oh,
so all of those
beautiful
plants that are growing, I have a relationship to them because they're feeding me, they're nourishing me, they're healing me.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I'm related to all of them. I have a relationship to all of them. How shall I treat them? Well, using those grandfather teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And then using humility even there. I was like, okay, so I'm not more important than the rocks I stand on, or the air I'm breathing, or the water I'm drinking. In fact, I can't live without you. You may do just fine without me. I can certainly not live without you.
Right.
I have all of a sudden humility, and it's liberating.
Yeah.
It's liberating to not have to like seek out dominion over all of those things, but to be in relationship with them.
Humility and respect. Because I feel like when you have that understanding, and you gave a story of ice fishing, basically, in the book as well, which was really interesting. It was like they were starving, but the definition of the word was like literally everyone was visibly starving. They were actually starving people, and they had a vision. Somebody, an elder, had a vision basically about ice fishing, and then they went ice fishing and they were able to survive. And it's like this coexistence, you know, of the fish recognizing that they're there to help keep everything going together in harmony. Which was a great story, by the way.
Which, that's Namibe Negesis. That's one of the first words or like names of a month that really gave me insight into like, oh, wait, it's more than a name. It's more than just a vocab word. There are teachings and philosophy deeply embedded in it. And in Namibe Negesis, which is the Ojibwe moon of February, it's the suckerfish.
Yes.
The bottom-dwelling suckerfish who looks at Anishinaabe and has this word, Jawenum. It's really where I first understood that word, Jawenum. One of my favorite Ojibwe words, maybe of all time. To have compassion for someone. Ojibwe perspective is almost pity. To have unconditional love for them and to bless them. And in their action, I saw that's what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
I have compassion for these starving human beings. I'm going to show them unconditional love because if I don't take care of them, they will die. It's not maybe, they will.
Mm-hmm.
And I will bless them with life. And it's Namaben. And that's why that moon is called that, February. Mm-hmm. From that moment on, it's like, we will commemorate you. We have nothing we can give you in exchange. There's no exchange for this. All we can do is fondly remember that great gift of life you've given us. And we can commemorate this February by calling it the Suckerfish Moon, Namaben Negesis.
That's so cool. I loved that story. There are a lot of good stories, so everyone should definitely buy the book. It's super quick read, but it's very impactful. But I would also say that the book is wonderful, but as you can tell, even from this podcast, when James talks about the words, it has a really great impact. It's just a little bit easier. The words, the spelling of the words, they're kind of long. Like it's kind of a lot to visually get it.
They
but
are.
When you talk about they it, are. I feel like I get a lot more for sure. Awesome. Well, cool. So I did have kind of another question, which is a little bit less from the Ojibwe perspective, but more just from your experience, which is kind of in this human form, which is physically, from what most of our eyes can see, disconnected from other people, while having this spiritual, holistic, connected understanding, both in the language that you speak, but also sort of the way that you kind of operate now. What are your biggest challenges with marrying those as a human? Like this, I just love the language. I think it's so on point when you're saying these things, and it's like, oh, well, this is what this means, and this is where it came from, and it means connection. And I'm like, oh, I love that. But how do you manage when there's a disconnect there?
Prior to that period, there had been a disconnect. Again, mm-hmm. It had been spiritual pursuits and physical pursuits.
Yeah, yep.
I spoke earlier about dichotomy, that mm-hmm. that was my perspective. It was from my vantage point now, mistaken. Mm-hmm. But how my approach became, even in that word, bimatsu, became life. And in the book I write about mino bimatsuin, you know, we seek out mino bimatsuin in the same way that, you know, the Buddha tried to live with nirvana. That Socrates lived the examined life, that Mahavira sought out moksha or mukti, you know, liberation from that cycle of karma that kept him mm-hmm. reincarnating lifetime after lifetime. Lao Tzu living in accordance with the Tao. And I looked at that word, bimatsu, mino bimatsu, because this is what they had been seeking out this entire time. And it had become, when I looked at that word and I interpreted it, it can mean bimi, which is along in space and time, and atsi, which is to live. You can't just live in Ojibwe. You have to live a certain way. So that along through space and time, you're born, have this beginning, you're born, you go through the process of living, and then that period ends. So one perspective of life could have been, you know, you're born, you live, and you'll pass on, you'll die. I had this experience with an elder, my first year of Ojibwe, that radically transformed that. And I recalled going and visiting him in a hospital with my professor. My professor was bringing me to a sweat lodge ceremony. And he said, we're going to go visit this fellow. This is proper Ojibwe culture, to go and visit the sick and the elderly. And I want to show you by example, like, we're going to go do it. I'm mm-hmm. not going to tell you about it. So we stopped and visited with this Geite Anishinaabe. This translation was old time Indian, a fellow who had been born on a trap line in a cabin without electricity or mm-hmm. running water. That generation of people born in lodges, like traditional wigwams mm-hmm. or cabins. And we visited him, and it must have been so nice for this elderly fellow to hear his language maybe at least one more time at the end of things. He had been in the middle of this huge metropolis in Minneapolis, alone in a hospital. And as we were leaving, you know, my Ojibwe teacher, he pointed out, we're getting on the elevator and we're going to get in the car to go to the ceremony, to the sweat. And he said, you know, in his day and age, they used a different word for this. It was giwe. Here she goes home.
Mm.
Now, when I use that teaching with the concept, with my linguistic analysis of it, it was no longer we're born, we live, and we die. It's that whatever comes here, whatever animates us, mysterious, our word for spirit in Ojibwe Manadu, it can mean spirit, can also mean mystery, like something beyond comprehension, beyond thought, beyond word. Those are the wrong tools to try to understand that. It had become that whatever animates us comes here, is born, has a human experience, and then passes away.
Absolutely.
For me, finding that was no longer separate anymore. It was like the spirit having the experience that's me. That's you. That's everyone I'm seeing. That are the tr- those are the trees. That is the spirit that's looking after the water, the spirit in the stones. They're all having human experiences. Those will begin and end. When it comes to me getting over those times of disconnect, it's that memory of that word. To live. You're living your life. You have the eternal moving through the impermanent. And that's how I get over that. It's that reminder from the language that, okay, you can get hung up and you will. You obviously will. You're a human being.
Yeah.
That's part of the experience.
There's baggage that comes with being that. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Exactly. And when you do get bogged down with that, remember that you are a spirit having a human experience. Mm-hmm. And so that's been my personal approach to bridging that divide.
Yeah. Just that kind of regular reminder. I love that. I mean, of course, that's what I subscribe to 100% as well. So I'm completely on board, and I love the interpretation of going home.
Yeah.
That's so based on all the reading that I've done just over the last couple of years, it just seems we take a moment in time, if you will, like to be disconnected from our true selves, our higher selves, our oneness, kind of whatever you want to call that, to be in these bodies, to learn the things that we need to learn, to have the experiences, the lessons, whatever it is. And then we go back to that. And then we choose to come back, I guess, if we want to. And if I believe in reincarnation, so I think if others do, we choose to kind of come back and have new experiences and try new things. But then we always go back home, which is perfect. Cool. All right. So this has been a great conversation. I've had a really wonderful time. I've just got two kind of final questions for you. And so the first one is, what is one tip about living as a spiritual being in this human existence that you would like to share with the listeners, other than to go read your book?
Give me a moment with that one. What was the other question?
Okay. Yeah. So the other question is just, I'm going to put this in the notes, but what's the best way for people to find you on social media or to reach out to you if they would like to follow up with kind of any questions?
That's such a good question. Because I have my experience. And so here's the thing. I'm actually delighted to be tripped up for a moment. These are the fun moments. These are the fun times. And that part of Ojibwe spirituality that I've been discussing earlier, there's something uniquely beautiful about it. And it's that with all of our relatives, each person is going to have a unique journey. There are ceremonies that each one of us can partake in. There are, you know, you can smudge, you can sweat, you can go to sun dances or a medicine lodge or offer your tobacco. But your path is going to be unique. And that was one of the most awe-inspiring things about learning about traditional spirituality was, thank you. I needed to talk about that. It just came. It just, and so it's unique. And so you'll find people who are loath to say, oh, you should do this because that's not.
Doesn't work for everybody. Doesn't
I have vibe. No yeah. authority yeah. at all to tell you how you need to walk that path.
Yeah.
Because it's yours to walk. In talking about that, if there was a way that I share with everyone whenever I'm doing a talk, maybe I could share a word with you.
Yes.
Shuwena Mishanam. Shuwena Mishanam, Shuwena Mishanam, Shuwena Mishanam. You'll hear that at the end of some ceremonies, and it really means, please have compassion for, please love all of us unconditionally, and please bless all of us. If there were a way, if there were something I could unequivocally tell someone that, oh, this will make your life better, it is to advocate. It's to wish, it's to pray, it is to work in a way that's for the benefit of all of your relatives. That's not self-centered. I think a truly spiritual path always does that, in no matter what tradition you're following.
Yeah.
And when you say that, you get an insight into traditional spirituality as well. Like, we would rarely pray for ourselves. That if you truly believed in something, if you truly wanted something, you would want for your relative the same thing you wanted for yourself. If there's something I've found that I want for myself as well as all of my relatives, it would please love all of us. Please have compassion for all of us. Please bless all of us. And I think that that will vastly improve your life right away. That shift of perspective, as subtle as it can be, from me to us, to all of us, to all of my relatives, can be the first steps on a journey that can be utterly life transforming.
Yeah.
Which is how I end the book, Anji Bematsu, changing our lives.
Yeah, you do for sure. So I know I mentioned the Instagram. What's your handle if people want to check you out?
It's all at James Vuklic.
Okay, I'll put it in there.
The best way would probably be at jamesvuklic.com.
Okay, cool.
I have all of my social media there. You can keep in touch with me. I hope you will.
Absolutely.
And I look forward to that.
Yeah, this was awesome. I really appreciate it, James. I appreciate your time. We had a little technical difficulties at the beginning of this, so thanks again for your patience.
No, this is absolutely wonderful. Mi guich, bizendawian. Thanks for listening. Thanks for talking. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And thank you to James. That was a wonderful conversation. I learned a lot. I don't know that I can still pronounce any of the Ojibwe words yet, except mi guich. I believe that's correct for thank you. So thank you, everybody, for listening today. It would mean a lot to me and to James if you headed over to Spotify, interacted with the Q&A there. If you have any questions for James, you can ask those questions there, or you can reach out to James and connect with him through his website. We will see you next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for joining me on today's spirituality adventure. Subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. Visit us on Instagram at spirituality.what to interact, tell us what spirituality means to you, and even provide some of your own personal musings. Human on, you phenomenal spiritual beings.